Welcome to Playful Beginnings, a podcast about the magic of play therapy for therapists, students, and anyone interested. In our podcast, we explore the deeper understanding of play therapy and the skills we use in working with children.
We hope to help you understand the why behind what we do and how it helps kids to learn and grow. I'm Dr. Chrissy Obiola, a working play therapist and university professor in North Carolina.
I'm Dr. Maggie Parker, a play therapist and professor in D.C.
Hey, Maggie.
Hi, Chrissy.
What types of things do you do for self-care, Maggie? Right? Like, and I'm throwing you under the bus here because I'm just asking.
Yeah. I'm not good at self-care. I'm not. I think that, and also I think that I take that back a little bit because I think I assume that self-care needs to be a certain thing and that what I do doesn't constitute self-care. So one of the, in graduate school, I felt like so often it was like, do yoga, like do meditation. My mom wants me to meditate all the time. I'm not good at meditation. I don't enjoy it. I usually fall asleep. Yoga, turns out I'm an incredibly competitive person. As a former gymnast, I feel like I should be able to do all these poses. So it's not relaxing to me. But what I realized also in graduate school, when I was under immense pressure, I would take naps, and I've always really punish myself for taking naps. I'm like, you're lazy. You're just
the universal messages that get sent, like societal messages about your way of caring for yourself.
Right. And I realized that like that actually is something that is very restorative to me, even if it's like 20 minutes, that I need that. And it helps my brain function. I just have come to recognize that I need more sleep than other people, or at least than my husband. And I think now I think it's really beneficial because we're starting to look at women and their healthcare needs differently than we have before, and not basing them off of what men need. But I need a lot more sleep. And so that's what I do for self-care. I'll take a nap in between sessions. I try and like have breaks. I try not to have everybody back to back to back so that I can find a room that has a couch and rest. And I've been known to fall asleep on the floor of my office at GW and use my graduation gown as my blanket.
Buy you a blanket and a pillow for your office.
I should probably purchase, but you know how stingy I am. I'm like, I'm not going to pin. But yeah, the graduation gown works fine in a pinch. But I do that. And I also read. I never really thought about that as a self-care activity, but I have, for all of you who have access to an iPhone and a public library, most public libraries have digital books. And so they go straight to my Kindle on my phone, or like my Kindle app. And so I think I've read 4 books since January 1st. I read really quickly. And once I'm in a book, I'm constantly reading that book. And so that's, I think I never recognized those as self-care, which is why I'm like, I don't know what self-care is. But I do think that that's what I do. What about you?
Yeah, I also don't think I'm always great at self-care. I have an idea of why that is, that I'm not good at self-care. But I really like to be creative. So like, though I have a little bit of ADHD too. So it's like I get on something for a short spurt of time and then I switch my topic of like what I want to do.
Can you spend hundreds of dollars on yarn and knitting needles? And
yes. But I do think those are some self-care practices, as long as I'm not like tearing myself down because I haven't finished it. So right now, I will say, historically, I'm also an athlete, grew up as an athlete. I was a swimmer. Right now, exercising is really important to me. And that has been a stable. My mental health is much better when I exercise, but I'm terrible about independently exercising. So for me, I take a group class, and I am also competitive. So unfortunately, I am checking the person out next to me who's running and how fast they're running and, you know, how much their weight is and like that type of stuff in the group class, which shouldn't be, but I embrace that and know that about myself. And that's more about me than it is about anyone else. So exercising is really important to me. So right now I said, like, I really like different creative outlets. So right now I'm into watercolor painting. I have one here if you want to see. Yeah. And there's a lot of YouTube that I can watch that I'm mimicking. So these are not my designs, but like, here's like a little penguin that I painted. Oh, it's not little, it's big, as you can, because my paper's big. And then I have some others here that I've like painted. Here's like a little zebra. I mean, they're kid friendly. They're like just kind of fun
arts. You could, like, also frame those and put them in.
We're going to put them in our new playroom. Yeah. I love to bake. I just don't like to eat what I bake, which is like a really unique. I mean, I do like to eat. Let me rephrase that. I love to eat what I bake, but then that, you know, like gets in my head sometimes about the message about weight and other.
I also think that you and I are from a generation where we had some really awful messaging surrounding weight. And so it's something that I have to like constantly be checking. And there's a really great Instagram account that I follow, Emily Decker Fitness. She's in California right now and just had to evacuate, unfortunately. But she talks about the messages that we received as children about exercise and about weight, and that like our body doesn't need to
like all these things that.
Right. And I know, like, and I recognize that, like, not all of this is like specific to play therapy, but I do think it's specific for parents and for teachers and for play therapists and mental and any helper, right? Is that it's okay to move your body without wanting a result.
Yes.
And I think that I
feel good, right? Like, it's really about feeling good. I can exercise tooth and nail and feel terrible and hurt my body.
Right. And that's what I was talking to Chrissy about. I have two herniated discs, so I haven't been able, I was working out pretty consistently and I felt better. And I just remember being like, huh, my mom was like, you used to work, I was a gymnast, right? So you were a swimmer, I was a gymnast, which is probably why I have herniated discs. But you know, it's like doing those exercises that mimic that as opposed to trying to do what I think I'm supposed to do, right? Like I'm not going to be a runner ever. There's no such thing as a runner's high for me. Makes my chin hurt, which is the most awkward of things. Right? Like, why does my chin, like, but my chin hurts when I run. But I can do squats and like dance movements because that's what I did. And that's what my body knows. And I've noticed a difference since I've gotten hurt or since like the pain has started as a result of this, that I don't feel as grounded. Mm-hmm. And there's a sense of pride, I think, that comes with challenging my body. Not to be to look different, but just to recognize my capacity. And I think that is healing. Like, yeah. I'm capable.
Well, and I think about it, like there's all these different tools out there that you can use when you look at self-care, you know, like the wellness wheel, all this other stuff. I think it's about balance and like, what are you putting in and what are you taking out? And which of your, you know, like if you have important buckets that you view as self-care, right? Like how much are you putting in and how much is getting taken out of that bucket? And it's really about, for me, it's about finding the balance in those buckets. So like, I often look at like physical wellness, cognitive wellness, spiritual wellness, that doesn't have to be religion. That could just be a belief like in a bigger being in the universe than you. Fourth one that I look at in social, right? Like relational wellness, which is a big one for me. Like I'm an introvert by nature, but like I have some extroverted qualities. Like people refuel me, but deep relationships fuel me, right? So like I like being able for Maggie and I just to talk, or you know, like we're cooking and we're just, our phones are on, right? Because we don't live in the same town or the same state. And so just even that like relational component is important to me.
Mm-hmm.
As a part of my well-being and about my like coping strategy. So when I feel isolated, right, then I find I get burnt out quicker, or my really kind of plummets.
And I think it's sometimes hard, and I've encountered this when talking to people, and not to say that like I can only have deep relationships with people who are play therapists, because that's not true. I have great relationships with people across all occupations, right? But then if I share something about a client, like, oh yeah, you know, not like specifics, but like I worked with someone who had sexual abuse, and people don't, that's not a normal conversation that you can have. And yet it's a normal conversation that you and I have, yeah, and that other mental health professionals and teachers have, because we're dealing with this, and school counselors and social workers, right? And so having also someone that you can have a conversation with to decompose or decompress some of those components that weigh on you. I think that I don't think of it as, we've become more callous, if you will, as we've engaged in the profession, but it doesn't weigh on me as much as it did in the beginning. But I think that's also because I'm able to reach out to people who can support me.
Yeah. Well, I So this really brings up something personal to me. So I don't know if I've shared this, but prior to being a play therapist, I worked in hospitals with chronic and terminally ill children. And like, I used to really stress my mom out because she's like, how was your day? And I was like, oh, two patients died. And, you know, like I'd share like the stressors of my day because I need to get it off my chest. Right. Well, that puts so much on her plate that, and it's no fault to my mom. My mom's an amazing person, but she didn't ask for that, right? Like she was trying to support me. And in supporting me, I kind of filled her plate, you know, like with food she doesn't like to eat.
Right.
You know, in a way. And so I think what I've come to learn is it is part of our reality as play therapists. These things happen for us, right? Like in our jobs and stuff. These are things that we are exposed to, sometimes by choice and sometimes just by the nature of our profession. And it's important to be mindful of that because I'm not sure the general public, they did not sign up. So our friends that aren't related in the field, they're going to react very different. Because they haven't, their ability to tune into that stuff is just not as fine-tuned as ours. So it is overwhelming for them, just like it is when we first started in the field. Like some of the stuff was
overwhelming.
I also think people who come into this field sometimes like the acuity of like those types of scenarios. Do you know, like they feel like they can help or they can support or they may not be as hindered. And so I think that's also just important, like to reflect for yourself, like, are you a person who can like manage some of those harder life experiences differently than your partner, than your best friend, than your parent, than your sibling, right? Because maybe they did not choose to go into the same field. Like my sister works in policy creation. Like we could not be polar opposite in our career choices, though she does similar things. Like she's making policies about some of the similar things or, you know, decisions about similar things, but we are different in the aspect of how we're like kind of handling or maneuvering around those dynamics of our society.
Yeah. My partner's a financial planner. So we are like opposite directions.
Right. Opposites attract. Yeah. I think it's healthy too, to have like things outside. The other thing I was going to say that I came to learn when I was working actually in the hospital setting is I need exposure to normality.
Yeah.
I need to experience kids who haven't been harmed, who aren't ill, who aren't traumatized, who aren't having severe anxiety, because I really find that my lens can get warped a little bit. And so like reaching out to have experiences that have normality to them. Early in my career, I taught swimming.
Yeah.
And I did that because I needed to be exposed to kids who weren't ill, who weren't hurt, who weren't emotionally, you know, like teetering on ability to cope. I needed to see what normal childhood looked like so that I could better support and know what is abnormal. Because I think our lenses can get so warped sometimes,
right,
that we're like, I don't understand what the big, do you know what I mean? Like, we don't want to be the therapist because then we lose touch with reality. And so as part of our self-care, right, it's another way of giving ourselves, but it also can be refueling to see and like to sharpen our perspectives a little bit.
Yeah. And I think that's something like it touches on, because I think for a long time, I'm a crier. I feel the emotions very deeply. Like I'm super empathic. And for a long time, I was like, oh, I just can't do this. I'm not good at this. But I can hold those spaces and I can hold hard things. And I often have to set time aside for me to cry. And that's okay. And I had a case, you know, of like child abuse, and it was really, really a tough case and it was an emotional session. And I had to leave. I left the session and there was another clinician there who was just like playing. I think she was like making videos with her daughter or something, you know, for education or training purposes. And I just like walked into the room and I like looked at her and I knew she was strong enough to hold space for me. And I was in the fetal position and I cried pretty hard for like 3 minutes, you know, like the deep, like, right. And that's what I needed to get out. And for so long, I was embarrassed by that I am a crier. You know, when my father-in-law got sick, I was the one crying, not my husband, whose dad it was. And I'm just going to be the person who cries. And that is okay. And it's also how I let out, like it's a physical release, just kind of like how exercising can be. And it was so wonderful because, you know, here I am in front of this little girl who's like two or three. And the mom was just, Michelle Walker, shout out. She's an amazing therapist in Northern Virginia. And she's just like, grownups have big feelings too. And I do, I have big feelings. And that doesn't mean that we aren't capable, but allowing ourselves and not feeling guilty for taking up our own, like taking up space for ourselves. I don't do that in front of my clients. I'm not going to be sobbing in front of my clients, but I do allow my space to cry if I need to cry, and that's okay.
Yeah. And to not guilt ourselves, right? Like, I think this theoretically comes back for me. I remember sitting in a keynote at the American Humanistic, or the Association for Humanistic Counseling. Dee Ray happened to be the keynote, and she was talking about unconditional positive regard. And like quickly she flipped it to, how often do we give ourselves unconditional positive self-regard, right? Or are we constantly critiquing ourselves? But then I think of, you know, like some of the little quippy, like pearls of wisdom that we get in some of our play therapy textbooks, like, you can't give away that what you don't possess. So if I'm not giving myself, and I think that's a self-care, why do we keep tearing ourselves down? And what are ways that I can accept me as me and just know, like, I'm fallible. I have huge faults. I am by no means a perfect human, person, friend, partner, play therapist, whatever it is, right? Like, but what does that look like? And have I, you know, tamed my own demons, or at least become friends with them?
It's so hard.
They are. They're hard.
But I think, like, even as you say that, Christy, like, my eyes well up, right? Because how often do we have conversations where I'm like, I don't think I can do this. I'm not good enough. And you build me up constantly. And I'm sure that's exhausting for you. I know it's exhausting for me. And it's hard because it's like, even as you're saying that, the little voice in my head is like, yeah, but if you admit that you're good, then someone's going to point out that you're not. And it's like, oh my God.
But isn't that reality, Maggie? Like, everyone's version of good is different, right? And everyone's expectations are different. And maybe that's just, I'm not the right person for that person then. Like, maybe they're looking for something and maybe they haven't found it because maybe it's unattainable.
Right.
Right. Because I don't even like saying we have to be the best versions of ourselves. Like, I think sometimes that messaging sends the wrong message. Right. I think we have to be comfortable with ourselves. And if there's things that we aren't comfortable with, those are the areas we have to work on.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, it's not a destination by any means. Like, I'll never like get every place I want to be, but I can be good enough mm-hmm. in certain places of my life. And I say that, and there's lots of areas that I feel like I am.
But isn't that interesting that even as we say this, we caveat it?
Right.
This is probably like the most vulnerable and honest yet we've been on this.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's real.
It is. And it's really hard. But I do think for me, it is part of my self-care practice.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to make hiccups, and everyone's not going to internalize it the same way, right? Like that I might intend it, or how I was hoping they were going to receive it, or things like that. But it is, sometimes I have to do things for me so I can live in my own skin.
Yeah. No, I think like this is really, this was not just for our listener. This was not what we thought we were going to talk about at all. But I think what it demonstrates that maybe is that both of us needed this. And yeah. I think if we need it and we need to remind ourselves, I'm guessing that our listeners do too.
They can tune us out.
Oh yeah, you can shut it off. That's true. You don't have to listen. But I do think I think for me, probably listening, this would probably be one of the more impactful things came out of just that, like, because I think people do look at us, like, because we are quote unquote experts, right? Like, how many classes have we taken on this? Like, we've been doing this for so long. Like, I don't think of myself as an expert.
I was like, no way, Jose.
No, but I think we know what we're talking about. And we question ourselves, and we have to work very hard to maintain our own capacity to continue to do this work, that it's not easy by any means, that we are constantly in consultation with each other, that we have to use our coping mechanisms, that we have to engage in self-care, because it's very easy to be pulled under by the pressures of parents, the pressures of society, the pressures of our profession, our family obligations,
And I don't think we can be relying on our clients to tell us we're doing a good job or not, right? Or their progress to share that we're doing a good job or not. Like, I know one of the topics we want to talk about is like when you have really hard sessions. There was a week, like every one of my sessions were really challenging. And I don't know why sometimes they feel like they come in waves. Was that me, right? Like, was I in a place where I was tired and struggling? And so, like, part of the way I showed up was a little different. Or it's not even that I showed up different, that my ability to handle maybe more challenging moments in the playroom like had a bigger impact on me. Or is it just, this job is
Hard.
being in our clients, I was going here because our clients aren't going to reaffirm us that we're doing a great job. Like, we have to find that within ourselves or within our community, right? Like, I think we have found each other to help be on my cheerleading squad because sometimes I just can't see it in myself, right? But you can recognize it and point something out. And I think the reverse is the same, right? That we rely on each other for that. I have other people I rely on as well as Maggie does, but I think those are important people when we're talking about self-care so that we can show up again the next day or the next week or
And it doesn't mean we don't make mistakes, that there aren't times that I'm like, wow, I really could have showed up in a different way. But I do agree, like we can't rely on our clients to fill that bucket for us of self-worth. Like we really have to do that on our own and use that to our like our own self-worth and our own capacity and belief in ourselves to then provide to our clients that we believe in them and that we believe in their capacity and in their inherent self-worth. We
Yeah.
can't. I really struggle. I don't know if this happens with you, and I know we're at time, but I'll sometimes have students who want to ask their clients at termination of like, so what did you think about this, right? And I'm like, well, the honest answer is that they're going to feel like they need to tell you how great it was, even if they didn't feel like it was great. And so I really try and avoid that, and instead say these are the things that I've noticed. Like this is more with adults and adolescents, but like these are the things that I've noticed in your growth, and not asking them to tell me how wonderful I was, because it just feels disingenuous and feels like I'm asking for something to fill my bucket when that's not my bucket to be filled in this moment. I can get my bucket filled by calling you.
Yeah, and sometimes maybe that's we can rationalize that different, but I can totally hear how that like unconsciously can be part of that question, or our clients could mistakenly feel like that's the intention of the question.
When I think like you're like rational, like I think that's what makes this our friendship and our work so well is that you and I can have totally different understandings of something. And I think we both respect each other's.
Oh, absolutely. The other thing I was going to say, and maybe we pick up on this on another one, is my other like most recent self-care habit is really being mindful of what I need on the day I see clients. So like how I schedule, I now pen in meals on that day because I started to book clients in meals. So I was only giving myself the 15 or 20 minute breaks. Or my previous counselor, she booked her appointments for an hour and 15 minutes instead of an hour, like on the hour. So her first time would be at 9, the next one would be at 10:15, the next one would be at 11:30. So she could just have her basic needs met, is what she shared with me. Right. So then she can go to the bathroom. She can have a snack if she needs to walk outside. Like little things like that that we can do that seem if we have agency over that stuff, because I know some agencies
You don't have that
actually
opportunity.
choose, like you have to book on the hour or whatever. But like if there's ways for you to like support yourself, I think that's another habit. But I think that would be something to talk about, like maybe in detail, like how do we schedule? What does that look like? I was just talking with the supervisee the other day about. Do you book your clients? Like, do you set your schedule, or is it an open calendar where your clients book on an open calendar? And like, what are the pros and cons of each of those things that sometimes I don't think we talk about in training? It's kind of you learn as you go, or you hear word of mouth, or you have a supervisor that helps kind of guide you, and you don't even know you can ask for some of that stuff. And so I think that could be something helpful for us to talk about too.
One also our own therapy.
Oh my gosh.
And it's like I'm the worst of like of clients because I'm like, I know what you're doing. But going to therapy, I think, and we try and really start that when they're students, like you need to be going into your own therapy because it's so helpful.
So like you give yourself a gift of just being able to like express yourself or cry or, you know, like have an attitude with someone.
Yeah.
You're paying to have an attitude with, right? Like it's all like great gifts. I will say it's been hard to find a therapist as a therapist. And maybe that's something we can talk about.
Other thing we could talk about, I think there's all sorts of things, but I really appreciate your flexibility in this conversation. I think it took a turn and clearly I needed to talk about self-care after. I don't think I did a very good job after having 3 weeks of the holiday.
Well, and
who could?
I mean, Maggie's underscoring some of this. Like she became the kid house this week in snowstorm. So not only did she have her own two kids, but she had all the neighborhood kids at her house.
I mean, the other neighborhoods or like other families did take them as points, but I had six kids at the house yesterday, six kids out Tuesday, Wednesday, all sorts. Santa brought kittens. There's a lot of heartbeats in my house.
Yes.
Like
that you were needing the focus time to work and to kind of talk about just the challenges of being us.
Yeah. But I appreciate you and your flexibility and to our listeners. I hope this was helpful. I think for me, it would have been helpful. I mean, I think it was helpful for me just to process it as is, but like as a clinician or as a student coming in, just hearing someone who's been in the field for a while saying, hey, these are things to consider, I think is helpful.
I agree. And it's a topic that we had on our list, just not in this format, but I think this has been really, it feels more authentic to you and I.
Yeah, I agree. So if you guys have any topics that you want us to talk about, again, playfulbeginningspodcast@gmail.com. And Christy and I are currently in the process of setting up a website and a kind of company that will be hopefully called Play Therapy Space, so that it'll be the Play Therapy Space and kind of a resource for those who are wanting to enter the field or who are interested. So like, subscribe, leave a message. We're here to support you guys and all the work that you do and the kids that need our support. So
no, thank you guys for being here. And thank you, Maggie. This time is always really sacred to me. So I enjoy us getting just to chat.
Yeah. Love you.
Bye y'all. Have a good day.
Bye.